recording this?
Oh, yeah.
Clearly.
Sorry.
No, please. Good evening. My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober today. This is my first time at this meeting. I just moved to Tampa just a little under 2 months ago. So this is my first time at the meeting. I'm originally from North Dakota. Is there anybody here from North Dakota? Good, I have no amends to make after the meeting. My sobriety date is July 30, 2012. I have a sponsor. My sponsor's got a sponsor. And his sponsor has a sponsor. I don't have a home group. I was possibly thinking about making this my home group, so we'll see about that. In every home group I've ever had, though, I've had a commitment. And I was told to say these things before every time I speak by my original sponsor, because these are the things that keep me sober. You know, these commitments, they keep me sober. Having a sponsor keeps me sober. And I sponsor men. I'm not sponsoring anybody right now. But that helps keep me sober too. So what I'm supposed to do is share my experience, strength, and hope, and tell you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. So ever since I can remember, my skin didn't fit right. I didn't feel like I fit in. I was like a square peg, and in a world full of round holes. I just couldn't fit in. And I used a lot, you know, I used sports to kind of help myself live in the moment. You know, sports, I wasn't able to worry about what had happened. You know, moments ago, I wasn't able to worry about what's going to happen in, you know, a few minutes. I had to worry about what was happening right that very moment. And that's really what I was looking for. I was looking to just live in the moment, because when I wasn't living in the moment, I was filled with fear and anxiety about what was going to happen. And, you know, I'd sit there and obsess about things that had already happened. It turns out things that I had no control over, things that had already happened and things that were yet to happen in the future. I grew up in a very tumultuous household. I don't know if it would have been traumatic for anybody else, but it was traumatic for me. And I always thought that was why I felt different. But it turns out I was born an alcoholic. That's why I felt different. You know, and I rationalize, you know, if you had grown up the way that I had grown up, you know, you'd do the things that I had done. My father was a brilliant man, but he suffered from this disease. And that's another thing. I'm really good at diagnosing other people, very poor at diagnosing myself. But my mother at one point told me that if I didn't want to, I don't know, be an alcoholic or act like him, I couldn't drink. And I believed her. I didn't drink until I was 17 years old. Now, the very first time I drank, I blacked out, which leads me to believe that everyone who's told me this is a progressive disease is right. You know, everyone who drank when they were 13, 12, they said, yeah, by the time I was 17, I was blacking out. Or at least I hear that often in the rooms. And for me, I drank it at 17 and I blacked out immediately, because this is a progressive disease. It doesn't matter whether I'm drinking. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. The disease is still progressing inside of me. When I actually did take that first drink, I had a friend of mine ask me if I wanted to share a bottle of whiskey with him. And you know, I don't know why I said yes. I mean, I had said that I wasn't going to drink. But I did. I said, no, I don't want to share a bottle with you, but I want one of my own. And it's funny, but I mean, it really exemplifies how I knew that I wasn't going to just have a little. I wasn't going to try it. I was going to go all in. And that's the way I drank throughout my entire career. I got a small bottle of Jack Daniels that night. And I don't know if it was a Fifth or Travelers or whatever. I never bought another small bottle of whiskey ever in my life. It was 1.75s from that point on, and I used to get like the Canadian Hunter and just like the worst types of whiskey. But yeah, I was off to the races, you know, and it made me feel like a normal human being, like people are supposed to be able to feel. And if you felt how I felt before I had a drink, and you felt how I felt after I had a drink, you would drink just like me. Because it made me whole. It made me a normal human being. It allowed me, and you know, with all this anxiety that I have, I really wasn't a very social creature, but it gave me the ability to talk to whomever I wanted, to be exactly who I wanted. And it was a wonderful feeling. And I chased that, you know, I went to college. I joined the military, actually forged my parents' signature to join. And there was, there was a lot of drinking, and it was a lot of fun, and it worked for a long time. Which is why, when it eventually stopped working, it was so hard for me, because I didn't have any other answers. That was the only answer I ever knew. If I feel uncomfortable, if I feel restless, irritable, and discontent, I drink. And it fixes it. And then I don't need any other answers. So I went to college. I got a job in a bar. That's actually on my 21st birthday. So in North Dakota at the time, the bars closed at 1 o'clock. So between you turn 21 on your at midnight, and then between midnight and 1 o'clock, you can be in the bar. So they call it the power hour, and it was my job to go in and drink 21 shots is what they wanted you to do. I far exceeded that. That's not funny. It's a problem. but I blacked out. The next day, by the way, I would like to thank Mark for asking me to speak. I was supposed to do that at the beginning. My sponsor told me to do that, and I didn't. And I want to make sure I did that. So the next day, I show up to that bar at about 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. That same bar, and the owner says, "You're early." I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." Apparently, as I was blacked out, he had given me a job. He was so impressed with how many shots I had taken that he gave me a job at that bar, and I loved that job. It was great. Because I was able to drink all the time, and it was totally socially acceptable, and I felt at ease. I felt comfort because I was able to use the only thing that made me feel whole. I remember once I came in on a Thursday, and I asked my boss for my check, and it was. Most of my money came from tips, but anyways, I asked for my check, and I had a quiz the next morning. And he said, "Well, sit down and take a shot with me." And I told him I can't, and he got all kind of mad at me. But even then, I knew if I had one drink, I wasn't going to make that quiz. I suffer from the physical craving, and I've always known that. If I have one, I will have 100. Every drink I've ever had tastes like another drink. So I went through college, and it worked really well, and it made me feel good, and everything was great. I had a fair amount of consequences, but it didn't matter because I felt the way I wanted to feel. Then I mentioned that I joined the National Guard. Some things happened, and then I got deployed. And again, I don't know if it would have been traumatic for anybody else, but this deployment was traumatic for me. And afterwards, I leaned on my alcohol consumption very heavily. I became an around-the-clock drinker. I figured out that these hangovers are really terrible, and one really good way to avoid hangovers is to drink in the morning. And it became an issue very fast, and it brought me to what the book refers to as pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. The only answer I ever had stopped working, and I didn't know what to do. And my only answer, I doubled down. I drank it twice as much, and then three, and it didn't work. And I didn't know what to do. I had no idea. So a friend of mine, not a really, an acquaintance of mine, brought me into a meeting. That friend, and just to let you know how deadly this disease is, that guy's dead now. The guy who brought me to my first meeting is dead. This disease turns out it's serious. It's for reals. He brought me into a meeting, and I had tried to stop, you know, since I was 20, I tried to stop drinking dozens, maybe hundreds of times. And I was never able to do, you know, the consequences would go away, and then I'd think, well, why can't I have this and drink? And it would happen every time. And once I got to that state of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, I was just so scared I was willing to do anything. You know, they said, get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. He asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths, and I said, yes, I'm willing to go to any lengths. He said, remember that, because I'm going to ask you to do some things that you're not going to want to do. And I was afraid to not follow a suggestion from anyone in the program for an entire year. And I don't recommend staying sober on fear. It's a real bad way to stay sober. I recommend staying sober through a higher power. That has worked very well for me over the last 4 to 5 years. Because my way of doing things is frankly terrible. My higher power does it correctly every single time. I did all the suggestions. I did 90 and 90. I got a sponsor. You know, I took commitments. I got a home group. I started sponsoring people when the time came. You know, this program has saved my life. I realize some of the promises every day. Not all of them. Not perfectly. I'm not perfect. I'm not good. I'm not okay. Sometimes I'm adequate, and you know, that's okay today, because you know, I've got a lot to learn, and I'm very happy that I was able to make it to Tampa and make it to this meeting. I'm glad all of you got in your cars and got on your bikes and walked here, because you're able to participate in my sobriety. Sometimes I don't participate in my sobriety, so thank you very much. And I'm just grateful that you're all here, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. Right, Jeff?
Okay. Sorry for messing up your name. Thank you for sharing. Our group has asked Annie, right, to share her story with us.
I don't know if it's distracting to put this up here or not, so I'm just going to put it down here. Okay. I'm Annie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 2nd, 2013. I have a sponsor who is a sponsor, and this is my home group. I have a service position at my home group, which everything that Jeff said about saying in the beginning is like very true. Those are all the same things that my sponsor taught me to do in the beginning, because that's the stuff that she said for me would like keep me sober, because that's what kept her sober. So I'll start in the beginning. I was born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. Lots of corn. I lived there until I was about 21, and then I moved to Florida when I was 21. But I can identify a lot with what Jeff said. Growing up, I felt like something was wrong with me. Like, I couldn't, like, pinpoint it. I just felt like something wasn't right. Like, an example like I think of often is when I was in elementary school and we were doing like this like group project, and this kid who like I considered him like one of like the popular kids or like the jocks, I'm like, I want to hang out with you guys, like I want to be like you. And he was going around the circle like naming what everybody's like social circle was, and I was like, well, that's really stupid. And he skipped me, and I was like, well, why did you skip me? Like, what group do I belong in? And he goes, oh, you're just like the leftovers. And I'm like, okay, so I don't fit anywhere. And I was, I want to say, 9 or 10 years old. And that kind of, that followed me like that feeling of like I don't fit any in anywhere. And like I tried like a bunch of like after school activities. I did like ice skating, gymnastics, softball, dance, everything that like my mom put me in, like I went to. And eventually I reached a point in like all of those things where like I didn't feel good enough or I started to be bullied. And so like if I felt like I wasn't good at something, like I just immediately stopped doing it because like I wasn't the best at it. So like, why am I doing this? So I didn't really, that's like all the way up until I was 14. And then I got to high school, and at that point in time, I also have an eating disorder, and that's like when that kicked in. And my drinking and my eating disorder go back and forth. And during that time in high school, my freshman year, that's when that really kicked in. I first started drinking. I had my first drink when I was 17 as well. I started working at this water park, and I drank once before that. I was at, actually, yeah, I should go back. I was 17, and I surrounded myself with like the music kids. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is where I fit in. Like, they're nerdy like I am. So all of like my orchestra friends had like a party one night. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, I'm gonna go hang out with them, and like I know I'm gonna fit in with them. And I didn't know that Jell-O shots had alcohol in them. So I don't know how many I drank, but I called a few people. I fell down some stairs. I had a few bruises. And the next morning, I went in to work still smelling definitely like alcohol and like still, I don't know if I was hungover, if I was still drunk, but I was still definitely feeling it. And I was a lifeguard. So I'm walking back and forth and the water's like starting to like make shapes and like all these different colors. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. I pass out into the lazy river and they like rescue me. And I'm like, okay, I think I'm gonna go home. I'm sick. And they sent me home. And that like began like a cycle. At my work, I found this guy who was 4 years older than me. He was 17. I was 17. He was 21. And I was like, oh, so like if I start to date this guy, he can buy me alcohol. So I started to date him and like hang out with like his group of friends. And it soon became like an every weekend type thing. Like, oh, like this is the group I want to hang out with. Like my friends are cool, but like I want to be like these guys. And so I hung out with them, and every weekend turned into like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It started to like bleed into like different parts of the week. And before I knew it, like I was hanging out with, like I started my senior year, like taking a full load of classes. By the end of the year, I was taking 3 classes, going to my friend's house she lived in like Louisville, which was like the equivalent here to like Pinellas Park. And so I drove to her house on my break, and I would drink on break, and then I would go back to school, and I didn't see anything wrong with it, like, at all. But it became this monotonous, like, ugh, like, it was very boring, and, I'm normally, like, an A-B student. I was a B-C student by the time I graduated, and, I don't know. By the time I got to college, I was involved in this in the marching band, and I got accepted into the music fraternity, which if you're at a small college, they combine women and men, and they like make it they call it a fraternity. So I was in this music fraternity, and I could not show up to practice in the morning sober or like not hungover to save my life. And one day, my marching band director, who I later had to make amends to, she called me in her office one day after I did not show up. Like, I knew I had to be somewhere, and I just did not show up for the game. And I was in the color guard, so like, you notice if like one of 9 people is missing and there's supposed to be something going on there, like, you notice that. So she's like, what's going on? Like, something's not right. Like, you need, I'm like, well, I can't get up in the morning. I just don't feel like doing life. Like, I don't feel like doing whatever you guys are doing. And she's like, Annie, you know what? It's one of those things. Being an adult, you have to get up and you have to like face the day, and you can't like what's bothering you like weigh you down. And I remember thinking like, I don't know how to do that. Please tell me how you do that, and I will gladly do that. And she had me do community service. Now I never got in any legal trouble. I should have, but community service, like I remember doing that, and I remember it being very degrading because everybody in the entire fraternity and the entire marching band knew that I had gotten this because they announced it. Oh, she's going to be doing community service. I'm like, that's great. Thank you. There's 300 people here. You don't need to all be knowing that I'm like got in trouble and I need to be doing this thing. But it's one of the things that I needed. That was like one of my first like consequences, I guess you could say. So right around that time when I was in college, I'd broken up with a boyfriend, and one of my friends had told me, she's like, well, I was going through this like identity crisis. I'm like, I don't know, like if I'm gay, if I'm straight, I don't know where I fall. And she's like, well, when you drink, you want to make out with women, so you must be a lesbian. Fast forward like a few years. Fast forward a year, and I'm married to this girl I went to high school with. Somehow it was a good idea. I'm like, this is gonna be the thing. Like, oh, I found who I am. I am supposed to be with her. So moved down to Florida, and she has no idea that I have a drinking problem. So it was right around the time that I got with her that I was like, I can't drink as much because she's gonna know something's off, and I can't have that. And that point in time, like my eating disorder started kicking in, and that's what she noticed. And that started me going to a therapist, and I was not honest about anything I said. And she came to a session with me one time. She's like, what do you do when you're here? Because it just sounds like bullshit. I'm like, that sounds about right. Like, you're catching on to like what I'm putting out there. And so, I don't know. We moved down to Florida because her family lived here. And that's when shit really hit the fan. Because I felt like since I lived up north all my life, like I knew the right friends to hang out with to like conveniently disguise like who my parents thought I was with. And then like lie to be in this place and actually be in this place. And it was very easy for me to like sneak around. And when I moved down here, I didn't know anybody. And the only people I knew until I got sober were people that I drank with and people I used with, minus my two classmates at my very private college. But my friend that I, like, she was like the first friend I met, and I drank with her, and she was like the person I partied with until I got sober. I met her through Burger King. I failed to mention that I dropped out of college to work at Burger King because I felt like that was a solid life decision. I don't know why. I'm like, I need to take care of my wife who has depression, and she drinks more than I do, so like, she's drinking because she's depressed, and I have this like upper hand. I don't know. I had this story I was telling myself of like why I was like, why I didn't have a problem, and like why she had like all the mental health problems, and I just need to like take care of you. So I'm down in Florida working at Burger King over in Temple Terrace, which if you know Temple Terrace, it's a very nice part of town. So I'm working there, and my ex, who also works at Burger King, conveniently enough, introduced me to her girlfriend or her friend's girlfriend, who they were also a lesbian couple. So I'm like, okay, that's perfect. So like, we have our couple to hang out with. That's all we need, right? So I started hanging out with this girl. Her name was Dawn, and the moment I met her, I was like, you are my people. Like, every night was wait till our significant other went to work. I would go to her place. She worked at a dry cleaner. We would chain smoke until like it was nighttime. And then we went to her house and we sat on the back of her car and drank some Mike's Hard Lemonade, because like, it's not that bad if you're drinking like out of a bottle. Like, that's like what I told myself. I'm like, but I kept it in the trunk, you know, so it wasn't that great. But every night that was what we did. And it wasn't that far to my house. But I had a habit of driving without my lights on, so I got pulled over frequently. I have no idea how I never got a DUI, but it was very sketchy. And I got very boring because that same girl, I have yet to make amends to her, and I know I really need to. I would frequently hang out with her and her son. She had an 8-year-old son, and I would drive around in the car messed up with her, and I totally just realized I did not hit this. Oops. So it's probably somewhere around early 2012, my ex and I decided we were going to start trying to have kids, and it was a very interesting process because I felt like obligated. I'm like, this is like, I have to work so hard to do this thing, and like I was like self-righteous. I'm like, you need to give me this because like it's not easy for me to get, and like I just turned into this. Well, I already was, but I like it was exacerbated how much like you had something I wanted and it was easy for you to get it. So like I felt like you needed to just like right now, you need to give me this thing. And her sister got pregnant like a month after after my ex did, and my ex ended up miscarrying. And that's, I remember when I got to treatment, they asked me, what brought you to treatment? What's the situation, the scenario that brought you here in 30 seconds or less? I'm like, well, my wife had a miscarriage. And they're like, no, what brought you to treatment? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And they're like, you don't know how you got here. But that started like the year of down spiral. Like whenever my ex was at work, I was out with this girl, and it wasn't like just going at night. It wasn't just like showing up at her place and like smoking, chain smoking, and then going to get drunk. It was going, like finding a way to lie, to go to my friend's house. Oh, I have to go to work early. Go to my friend's house, get high, go to work. And then the shit wears off, and then I'm on break, so I go get high again, and then I get off work, and okay, now I can like fill. I worked at Steak and Shake at this point in time. How I got in the food industry, I have no idea. So like after work, I would go to this girl's house, who was, my ex was convinced I was cheating on her with, which right-mindedly, I agree with her, because I was at her house every single night. That was my routine, is find a way to get out. Once I'm there, like I run out of shit, and then I have to find a way to get more shit. And it became this, it wasn't fun anymore. Like I was just doing it to like do it, so I didn't have to like feel, because like at this point in time, like I was starting to like feel my feelings, and I didn't like that, like very, very intensely. And so I decided, or my ex and I decided, that we were going to move into this house. And I think I've mentioned this before. We moved into this house in Zephyr Hills that we were supposed to be fixing up. By fixing up, I mean tearing shit out of the ground and then like drinking some and smoking a blunt and like tearing some more shit out of the ground, painting walls green. Like things that I'm like, okay, like eventually this is going to look like a house. Mind you, it had no working plumbing. It had no running water. It had no electricity. Like the way that we got in was by opening a window, taking the AC unit out and climbing through the window and shoving the window back down. And I'm like, oh, like we're totally safe here. And we would sleep there. It made absolutely, like it made sense to me, but my ex is like, why are we sleeping here? I'm like, it's not that hot. I don't know what you mean. Florida in the middle of July in a house with no, it smelled terrible. Because mind you, it was, they had squatters in this house before we started renovating it. The house was foreclosed on, had like a little sign on the door. So we're living in this house, or we're like sleeping in this house periodically, and I'm convincing my ex at this point that it's a good idea, that we need to be here, and this is like our next project. Like this is how we're gonna be happy. And I promise her that we're gonna finish the house, and it's gonna be ready by such and such date. So when we move in, like, it's like I told her, it was all pristine and the carpet was laid out and it was vacuumed, and like I just laid out this huge scenario for her in my head. And we pack up our moving van, we cancel everything from our apartment, pack up the U-Haul and we drive to this place and we open the door and like I just have this like nasty sinking feeling the entire time that we're going there. And she opens the door, looks at me and she goes, "What the fuck? Like, what did you, what have you done? Like, you have just like messed up a lot of things." And very kind, I'm abbreviating her words. But at that point I knew kind of that there was a problem, and it kind of, I started going back through my brain. I'm like, what, in what situations have I been like this? And it brought me back to like high school when I would spontaneously like take trips to Kansas and like turn my phone off and like not tell anyone where I was going. And my parents would call and I'd be at this like country western bar with my best friend who like, I was convinced, I'm like, I'm gonna find like my soulmate here. And no, I just found like a black X on my face. Like I had a habit of like, we went to this western bar and like I would sleep and I'd always have like this X on my face. Like, so I don't know. I was reminded of that because like it felt so demoralizing because we drove, it was my best friend and her brother and like two other guys. We stopped on like a way station because the guys like needed to relieve themselves on the side of the way station, which makes no sense to me, but apparently like being on a way station is illegal. So cops came up and they're like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm in the back seat with like a blanket and like I'm hiding the beer because I'm like, I don't want you to see what's here. And they searched everybody but me because I was hiding in this car. So I don't know. It's just like skating by the edge of my teeth, I guess, is like the theme that kept happening. And there came a point where I reached a bottom with my eating disorder and my ex goes, "You get help with this or we're done." And so I started looking at treatment centers and she helped me. And I found one here in Tampa and I went there. And like I said, I got there and they're like, "What's your problem?" And I told them and they were like, "No, what's your problem?" And it took me about a month in there to realize that I needed to be there. So I failed to mention that I lied to them about my intake assessment. So I ended up detoxing in treatment, which I do not recommend ever, because I felt like I couldn't be fully there, even though I didn't really want to be there anyway. I felt like I was just kind of like existing. And I was like, well, what am I doing here? Like, I want life to be better. Like, why am I here? And I don't know. When I was about a month in, it took me a month in to where my therapist started discharge planning with me. And he goes, "So I recommend that when you get out of here, you don't drink." I'm like, "Wait, you what?" He's like, "So, you know, why do you think that's a problem? Like, why are you reacting to it?" And I had to sit on it for a few days and I finally realized, I'm like, oh, it's because I won't have anything to like cope with. Like I won't have anything to like not feel with. And I didn't recognize it up until that point and I didn't fully and completely understand it. They would give me assignments about like the secrets I kept and like the harms that I had committed and I couldn't grasp it. It was like I knew I had a problem but it wasn't tangible yet, I guess, if that makes sense. So I picked up a white chip 2 weeks before I got out of treatment. And I had been sober since the beginning of September, but it was midway through October. And I got out of treatment and I went home. And it was, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I went home, that relationship I talked about, my wife said, "I'm not, like, what you're trying to do, like, it's cool, but like you need to be home more often." And I was very codependent. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna put my foot down and I'm gonna move into this halfway house. And that started this cycle of going back and forth and going back and forth. And we went on a break and she got a girlfriend. And I was just like, I don't know how to, I was emotionally, spiritually bankrupt. Like I wasn't really, like I was going to meetings and I was like, talking to my sponsor, but I wasn't really fully engaged, I guess. And I moved into a sober living house, thank you. And it's there where a lot of like that's where like shit got fun, because I started calling my sponsor again, and I started going to, I got involved with Ficky Paw, and I was going to Ficky Paw every weekend. And when I started going there, I'm like, what is the point of this? Like, you raise your hands and you argue, like, what is this? And like, you're gonna stand for a position. I'm like, the fuck I am. I am not standing for a position. I stood for a position, did not get that position, and then 6 months later, I got a position. And so that's what like life was like for me in early recovery. It was just like constantly like going to like young people's events, like never being home, and it was a good time. So I worked the first three steps with my sponsor. I was on step one for a month, because I could not see my own powerlessness. She's like, no, you're not ready. Like, I didn't understand why. But by the time I got to the four step, like, I wrote out my four step and I procrastinated. I thought by procrastinating, like, she would give me an extension. Turns out it doesn't work that way. She's like, no, you're doing your four step, and or you're doing your fifth step. And so I went to my sponsor's house, and I had this one thing that I wasn't going to put on because I was afraid that she would judge me for this, because I felt like scum of the earth whenever I talked about it. And we got to the very end, and she's like, if there's anything that you left off, like, you need to tell me, because, like, that's very, like, I don't want you to walk out of here keeping a secret. And I told her, and she's like, oh, yeah, me too. Like, that's no big deal. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I just sat here silent for, like, 10 minutes, like, thinking about telling you, and then you just tell me, okay. Like, I've done that too. And that's kind of the moment where I remember feeling like, all right, like, I fit in, like, I can relate a little bit. And it was, let me see, at that point, I went from being, like, very involved to, like, not involved. I moved out to St. Pete, and that began the self-will of, I'm going to move out here because I am sober, and I'm single, and I have my cat, and I'm going to do this, and it's going to be great. So it only took me about 2 months to get to a place where my cat, I couldn't feed my cat, my apartment smelled terrible, I couldn't keep my electricity, my heat on, like, I couldn't keep anything, like, functioning in that house. And I wasn't calling my sponsor, I was going to, like, meetings, but I wasn't sharing, I wasn't doing step work, obviously, because I wasn't calling my sponsor, so how could I do step work if I'm not calling my sponsor? And I reached a place where I realized, like, if I don't make a change, like, I'm gonna drink. And I hadn't really prayed at this point. Like, I prayed kind of like, because that's how I was raised. I'm like, okay, if I get down on my knees and I say the Our Father, like, it's gonna be okay. Like, it'll be fine. Like, there's a God out there somewhere. I just don't know if he, like, can relieve me of this type thing. And so I remember getting down on my knees, and I was working two jobs, and I still couldn't afford to pay my rent or do, like, take care of this place. And I said, okay, God, I'm giving you three choices. You either give me a job in my field, or you let me go back to school, or you show me that I need to keep doing what I'm doing. Like, please give me a sign of one of the above. So the following Friday, I go into work, and I needed to make X amount of dollars to, like, make my rent. So that didn't happen. I made $10, and it was not what I needed. And I remember calling somebody on my way home from work, just, like, freaking out, because I couldn't, like, my life was falling apart or whatever. Like, it's so dramatic. I'm like, oh, like, it's not going to be, like, it's going to be worse than it already is. And the person I talked to on the other line said, well, why don't you talk to so-and-so, because I think they could have a job for you. And so the next day, I went in for an interview, and I got that job. I spent my next, like, almost year working at a place with people in recovery. And it was great, because that's what I needed. I was still living in St. Pete, but, like, it kind of got me, even though I wasn't really going to meetings or, like, doing what I needed to be doing, like, I was by default, like, surrounded by these people that you could not ignore, because I was the only woman. Only woman with two cats staring at a computer screen all day. It was great. But it kind of brought me out of my shell a little bit, because, like, those people that I worked with turned into, like, really good friends. And like when shit went down with my ex, where I finally decided to go back with her, like I had a place to stay and I had friends that like knew me. And I don't know. So I'm working at the place and I realized that, I need to move out and get my own place and not like live on this couch. So I move into this like little apartment in South Tampa with my current roommate, and that's where I am today. And I remember it distinctly. It was my old grand sponsor's 10th anniversary, and it was supposed to be her her dinner that night. And she had volunteered to help me move into my apartment. It was the day that like South Tampa flooded, which was really solid when you're trying to move. So we're in this U-Haul and like it keeps getting stuck places and like we're almost running out of gas, and I just have like this like train of like AA people like moving my shit into my apartment, and like my grand sponsor that I mentioned, like my clothes were soaked, so she gave me new clothes, and then we were late to her dinner because she was helping me move. And like that's the kind of stuff that like sticks out in my mind, is like being here, like I've met a whole different kind of people. Like I've met like real people here. And I don't know, when I was drinking and when I was using, like my friends were very superficial. Like you had what I wanted, so like I was gonna be your friend. I was trying to think on my way over of like something significant, like amends wise that I could say. I don't know why specifically amends, but what stuck out in my mind was my dad. And the longer I stay sober, the less I'll be able to tell you that I had a crappy childhood. Like, my parents did the best they could. Like, my dad had anger problems. He got arrested when I was younger. And then he's like my role model. Like, he turned his life around. Like, he is of service and he's a man of God. And he's like, he's really special to me because he showed me that like you can fuck up and you can like make right actions. And he had taken out a loan for me when I was 6 months sober for me to live in a halfway house. And he sold his car so I could live here or live in that house. And I was just a selfish asshole at that point. I'm like, why aren't you giving me more money? And my sponsor called him and she's like, just ignore her. Like, she's fine. And, probably about like 6 months ago or so, last May, I tried to send my dad, with his birthday card. I put in a check for, I think it was $20. I'm like, here's towards the X amount that you gave to me. And he called me up and he laughed at me. and he goes, what is this? I'm like, well, this is for, I explained it. And he's like, no, you keep doing what you're doing. You keep like doing what he doesn't really understand the program. He just knows that like, I'm sober, I'm happy. Like I sound better on the phone. So like stuff must be going good. And he's like, no, I don't need your money. I need you to like keep doing the next right thing. I want you to keep seeking God. I want you to keep, he calls it mentoring. He's like, I want you to keep mentoring other women. I'm like, okay. He's like, you just keep doing what you're doing and I'll be happy. Like that's your amends to me. And he just recently paid for my entire family, like my mom, my dad, my brother, to come down to Florida to stay for a week so we could have a family vacation for the first time since like shit hit the fan. And he asked for nothing in return. And for the first time in a long time, like I feel okay with that. Like I feel like I can be of, like I can do the things that he asks of me and I can be okay. Something that I never thought would happen. I started working at the treatment center that I went to, and it gave me a whole new perspective on like where I came from. And I'm confronted every day with like some dumbass that's making some stupid decision. And I'm like, I'm you. That is so great. Why does it have to be the person that I don't like that sticks out in my mind? Like when I was in treatment, my grandmother passed away, and I remember being so pissed off. Thank you. Because I had lost, like, you had taken something from me that like I felt I deserved. And so this past year, the week of the anniversary that my grandmother had passed, this girl comes to me and she goes, "My grandmother just passed away." And I go, "You said what?" And like, so I spent half an hour talking to her, and it's like little like higher power moments like that, like little like seeing how my higher power is working like in my life and like the lives of others that like really has helped me. And probably, I want to say a year and a half ago, I got the sponsor that I have now, and I've stuck with her. And I sponsor hopped a lot, like my first couple years. And I finally, when I stuck with somebody, I was able to see growth. I was able to see change. And for some reason, I decided to stop running. Because if I run for myself, like I don't get any better. And like, I felt like it was when I was living in St. Pete, like I felt like I hit an emotional wall. And like my sponsor has, she's helped me to become more spiritually connected. How can I like seek God? How can I help others? How can I be the person that I feel like my higher power wants me to be? And I don't know, my life is not how it was when I got here. I failed to mention that somewhere along the line of recovery, I realized that I was not actually a lesbian, that I was just getting to know myself. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. Like, I'm just a person that likes people. That's like, that's cool. All right. I don't know. So, whatever. I try to like think about it, and then it just like gets messy, and I say, whatever. So today I have the ability to to love who I am, whether I'm confused or not. So, whatever. I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. That was great. Okay, let's see here. Thank you both for sharing your stories with us. Remember that we record our speakers. Today was only one because I think that was off. But you can download them free at tampaypg.net. As is customary in AA, we give out chips to denote different lengths of sobriety. As we do so, we will pass the basket in accordance with our seventh tradition. If you don't have cash but want to contribute with your debit card, please see Amanda with the card reader. And I've asked Corey to do the chips. Sorry.
He stole it from me. Trying to take my service, man. Just kidding. All right, I'm Corey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Corey.
Here at YPG, we have a chip system to denote the different lengths of sobriety. Does anybody have today 24-hour chip? All right.
Okay.
Come on up. Everybody, that's Caitlin with today.
Caitlin.
All right, Caitlin.
All right. Now we have a pink chip for 1 month. All right, everybody, that's Teresa with 1 month.
Teresa.
All right. Now we have Gold for 2 months. Does anybody have 2 months? All right. We have Green for 3 months. And we have Blue for 6 months. Nobody. All right. We have... Purple, pinkish, purple. purple for 9 months. Everybody got 9 months. All right, anybody have a year? Wait for it. Anybody got multiples of years? That is Jimmy John Joe with 2 years. All right, love you, Grandpa. Does anybody have any other multiples of years? All right, we got the white chip, one more silver chip, one more time. All right, cool. Cherish the chips that you have, guys.
This group strongly believes in the importance of sponsorship. Will anyone who is willing to and able to be a sponsor please raise their hands? We also value the importance of having a home group. Our group conscience for this home group meets on the first Thursday of every quarter after the meeting. March, June, September, December? It's tonight? Okay, so tonight we're meeting after, so stick around. Will home group members please raise their hands? Okay. If you're interested in joining this home group, please see one of the people that raised their hands, and you can see the back service table, which we don't really have one. Okay, they're over there now. Okay, the side service table, where you can get also more information on upcoming events, conferences, purchase literature, and they can help you to sign up to be of service at this group. This group enjoys fellowship after the meeting, and you're all invited to join us. Tonight's dinner will be
Taco Bus.
Okay. Thank you for dealing with me today. I will get better at this. For those who care to join us, we will now close with the Lord's Prayer.
Your eyes.
Oh my gosh,
you
need
no help. What kind of phone
do
you
have?
Jim,
would you like to take us?
Grandpa Jim.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep them back, work to work.
Annie, is this?
Yeah.
And is this yours?
No, it is. It's the recorder.
Okay.
Isaac.
Okay, Isaac. Good job, by the way. Thanks. Do you know who Isaac is? Who's Isaac?
Isaac is.
Oh, I know who Isaac is. What am I talking about? I know.
Beard.
Yeah,
hair.
I know.
He looks like Wolverine.
Yeah. He's over here.
Yeah,
Isaac.
Isaac,
he's like, check my story, I'm proof.
I'm giving you a hug.
Don't. Look at.
Yeah. Are these not amazing or what?
Sir, did you make
God, that's what I'm eating.
You've been making them a long time.
I can tell because they have the salty and the butter.
Yeah.
And you always do that. Like,
that's what that is.
Yeah,
I love
it's more, it's saltier than normal. Yeah. But that's what makes it so good.
But it makes it really good too.
Makes it all more crunchy.
Right.
Well, they're shortening it and butter. It's really good.
You're going to mince it,
yeah, but delicious.
No, I have like 10. It's all missing us.
It's okay.
I know. It's like they're fat free. This is good for my
vegan
heart right now.
Vegan. I don't know if it works like that.
I have one more.
How long ago was that?
Like an hour ago.
I may go later at night. Just depending on if Steven has to work.
Yeah, no.
Alright, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna
check you in. Good. I met you a long time ago.
Probably.
You were like in the middle of an asshole.
Yeah. Well, I do have to take off fairly soon, but I'm going to save for the beginning of it.
I won't be here next Thursday, but I will see you next Thursday.
What's up with Tommy?
That kid with the red?
Yeah.
The kid with the red. He's got something to get that we can get a scholarship for.
He's new. He might need a full scholarship either. You probably pay for part of it. He doesn't have a job right now, though, and he doesn't really want it.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see.
Tommy, just got back. You want to go get him? He's smoking.
What's up?
Yeah, I don't know who you are, but I know you.
Noah! I didn't get a hello today.
How's up with that? How are you doing?
I'm good.
But you got it, what you got there?
He's Tommy Brandon, my phone.
That's a
front row.
I was going to say, that's a front row back there.
You go
I know what that is.
I had a
sponsor. I had a lot of time to work on that. I used to have a purple one, a green one, and a black one.
I had a green one and a black one?
Because it's the green one's the honey, the purple one's the regular one, and the black one's the red one.
No,
I tried everything.
Yeah, you got makeup on there. You can say it was jizz. You were sucking dicks on your place.
What
was that?
Mr. Trump. Congratulations. Good job.
That's all my dicks on the skills.
You're talking to your sponsor? You're working steps?
You're getting sloppy.
Yeah, I thought it was earlier.
You have to get it all in your back.
She actually laughed. She had to go back.
So there is this call. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. Jim. Congrats, brother.
Yeah, put this thing.
Yeah.